evening, good afternoon, wherever you may be. This is John Hibbs, your make-believe captain, 16 hours into the voyage now, entering the North American space, very North American, with a welcoming remarks by one of the more gifted individuals, and there have been a lot of them, and there will be a lot of them to come on this voyage. This is a remarkable Canadian speaking to us from Vancouver, British Columbia, before he catches his airplane back to New Brunswick in the far eastern part of Canada. Stephen Downs will give the welcome to North America opening speech. He is the senior researcher for the National Research Council. He hangs his hat sometimes in Moncton, New Brunswick. He publishes one of the more remarkable daily newsletters. Normally I would tout publications such as this. I won't do it because it's addictive. It'll require you to think and read and wonder how this man manages to manage what he does. Without further ado, speaking to us from Vancouver, British Columbia, my very good friend and sheer genius, Stephen Downs. Stephen, this microphone and this stage is all yours.
Well, thanks a lot, John. It's a pleasure to be here. And I think it's a remarkable accomplishment that this is the 8th Global Learn Day. I remember when you launched the first one, because you advertised it on some mailing lists, and my first thought was, impossible. And now you're doing your 8th one, which makes this one of the longest-running e-learning events that exists. The longest one, of course, is the NAWEB conference that we hold each fall in New Brunswick, and it was a pleasure to have you out there to visit us in New Brunswick and to be able to hoist a beer. Last night, I flew in last week from Whitehorse. Whitehorse is in the Yukon Territory in northern Canada. It's kind of dark there these days and kind of wintry there these days, but I was able to meet the people up at Yukon College and talk to them about online learning, and to more importantly learn about what they were doing, and the sort of things that they were doing up there were very encouraging to me. When I got into the room to do my talk, there were a number of people wearing the black t-shirts with the logo on the front, "I'm blogging this," and I realized that a lot of the things that I'm talking about and a lot of the things that other people are talking about are taking hold, and they're taking hold not just in the large cities, not just in Boston and New York, but they're taking hold in places like Whitehorse and places like the Australian Outback around the world. Last night, I flew into Vancouver, and of course, we had snow, we had rain, and so the plane was late. But I wanted to get here to Vancouver first night, because last night was the worldwide launch party for a piece of software called Firefox. If you haven't heard of Firefox, well, if you haven't heard of Firefox, I'd first say, where have you been? If you haven't heard of Firefox, what this is a browser, an open source web browser that's an alternative to Internet Explorer. And so, I've been following the development of Firefox since the very beginning. I haven't contributed to any of the code or anything like that, but I have contributed financially. And so I wanted to be there for the launch of Firefox. And so I arrived at the party a good 3.5 hours late, but it was still going strong, and it was interesting to meet members of the open source development here in Vancouver. And that's the sort of thing that I talk about when I talk about e-learning. I'll mention Firefox. I don't always talk about Firefox specifically, but I mention and describe the sorts of concepts that Firefox represents, because that, I believe, is the future of e-learning. If we look at e-learning today, we're looking at an environment in which colleges, schools, universities have to invest quite a bit of money, and to a large degree they've bought into the picture that you have to have a large learning management system, that you will be paying for online content from now till whenever, that this will always be an expensive proposition, that the content will always be commercial, that our staff and our students will always be viewed as consumers rather than producers of learning material. And what Firefox does, and what similar projects do, is turn that on its head. And the view of online learning that I advocate, that I've always advocated, is a view where learning isn't a product that we consume, it's not content that we receive and that's put into our head, but rather it's a conversation into which we engage. And that means that the tools that we use, both as staff and as students, need to be tools that are accessible to and usable by a large number of people for very low cost, or preferably no cost. And Firefox is one of those tools. And nobody gets paid for producing Firefox. It's a collaborative effort by people working around the world, creating something that will be offered to the world for free with open source so that they can change it and modify it and make it their own. A classic example of what they do in Firefox is the Firefox extensions. Because it's open source, anybody can tie into Firefox and write their own piece of software. And last night around the table, there was an extension being talked about. It's called Wikalong. It was just the perfect extent for this product, and it represented the concept so beautifully. What Wikalong is a little window that opens up alongside the Firefox browser, and it's a wiki. And if you're not familiar with a wiki is a piece of software that basically creates a website, and anybody in the world can go in and edit this website. You add things, delete things, whatever you want. So what they did in Firefox is they created a wiki that you can view as you browse, and as you go from page to page, there's a page in this wiki associated with the page that you're viewing. So if you go to Microsoft.com and you're running Wikalong, you see not just the Microsoft.com site, you see the comments along the side that people have left in the wiki. This is the way the internet should be. This is the way learning should be. It's not something that we're just receiving. We just go see the corporate brochure on the corporate website. But we respond. We interact. We add our comments. It's unrestrained. It's free. And that, to me, is the picture of learning that I'm working toward. Now, I see some people in the comment area here raising the topic of RSS. And RSS, again, represents exactly that spirit. I've been working in RSS for a long time. I've been working in RSS almost since it began. And to me, RSS has always represented what things could be on the internet. Now again, in e-learning, we talk about learning object metadata and standards and IEEE and ISO, and there's a major process that takes place, and there's a specification with 87 metadata fields, and there's formal standards bodies and all of that. And they've decreed to us that we will use IMS, we will use IEEE LOM, we will use SCORM. And yeah, some people use it, but it hasn't really gained a whole lot of traction. And it's not the sort of thing that the average person can pick up and just start running with. RSS is the opposite of all that. RSS was developed with no standards bodies, with no formalized organization. The people involved in RSS can't even agree on what RSS stands for. Some people say really simple syndication. Some people say rich site summary. Some people say it's not even RSS at all, that it's Atom and it should be different from what it is. And they just go ahead and they do that. For me, RSS represents a way to create a network of content in which everybody can play. And this is the objection that I've always had to the learning object and learning management system model of online learning, is that in order to play, in order to contribute content, because the barriers are so high, it's necessary to invest a large amount of money. And that sort of approach precludes the possibility of there being free educational content. Now, I believe that we need an environment with free educational content. I believe that this is a social imperative, that this is the only way that we could possibly make sure that people around the world can access an education. And so a system that puts barriers against that possibility is, to me, a system that is actually running counter to the needs of education around the world. But a system like RSS, and tools like blogging tools, tools like content management systems such as Drupal or PostNuke or Zope, which again, like Firefox, are open source, like Firefox, are free, like Firefox, can be changed, added, edited, used to create new things. These kind of tools are what allow everyone to become an author. Everyone, including students, to be not just consumers of learning, but producers of learning. And when I was in Whitehorse, I opened my talk because I was in the airport prior to coming to Whitehorse, and Bill Clinton was speaking on the opening of the Clinton Library. And one of the things that he said, and I believe that this is true, he said that everyone is valuable, everyone has a story to tell. And I found that to be true when I went to Whitehorse, that I went up there as one voice and with one story, and I met with a number of people. I met with many voices and many stories. And it was not just a case of me going up to Whitehorse and delivering the message and teaching them. It was a case of us being in Whitehorse and interacting and learning from each other. And RSS with blogging tools is what makes this conversation possible. Now, that doesn't mean that tools like RSS are going to all by themselves solve all of the problems and all of the needs of education. It doesn't mean that magically the RSS network is going to replace colleges, schools, universities, teachers, libraries, and the entire infrastructure that we've built over the years. But it's to say that things like RSS and things like blogging tools are the things that are pointing us in the direction that we should be going, pointing us not so much even the technologies, but pointing us to the attitudes and the approaches that we should have. The attitude that everyone has a story, the attitude that everyone's input is valuable. And so this is the model of online learning that I've been talking about, and these are the things that I've been working toward in my position at the National Research Council. I see it's 14 after, so I'll finish the formal talk here, and I'd be more than pleased to open it up for conversation so that I can find out what you feel about this and where you would like to go with this. And I hear silence. Okay, well, I am seeing a message in the chat window from what appears to be Dark Garcia, asking how we can process so many stories. And of course we don't process all of the stories online just as offline. We pay attention to things. We pick and choose the sorts of things that we are going to look at, that we are going to listen to. It's kind of like picking out a conversation in a crowded room, there's all of those sounds, and you hear the voice of the one person that says your name. It's this sort of thing in the RSS network. We're used to thinking of online content as monolithic, as the, of there being a single provider, and then we tune into it like channels. The model of RSS that is developing, however, is more of a network than a broadcasting system. One of the things that I've developed over the last few years is a thing called EduRSS. What EduRSS does is it collects RSS feeds from a variety of writers in the subject of educational technology. It brings them together, it reorganizes these feeds into topics, and then it sends them out. So if somebody's interested in learning objects, then they can subscribe to that learning objects feed, and it's a filtered representation of what these 300 or so writers have written today on learning objects. And the idea of EduRSS, not that it replaces Google or anything like that, it's not even that it becomes the only service of this sort. Rather, EduRSS is joined with a host of other services that do the same thing, and they create what Robin Good calls news mastering, and I call it the second layer in the network. It's the layer of input filtering, and in fact, over time, I expect that there will be a number of layers built up in this way as people aggregate, remix, repurpose the stuff that comes out of EduRSS and send it out into even more specific, more targeted content feeds. The principle behind this is that the network of RSS providers and things like EduRSS, this network is self-organizing. This network by itself, without some manager or person in control, by itself creates and identifies very specific content feeds on given topics, and not just content feeds. I mean, this is RSS. It will be content, it will be audio, it will be services, it will be people, it will be anything that you can put online or even point to online. And this network will self-organize so that you, at the other end, are both a contributor and a person who receives various points of output from this network. The model looks, if you diagram it, looks very much like a neural network. And I believe that it will organize itself like a neural network. Now I'm catching up on the text comments, but if someone would like to jump in here, please be my guest.
I did jump in before, and yes, again, it was because my machine had crashed, but I was able to listen to the telephone room, and I would encourage George, who's ever on the bridge, to, if there's questions that come out of the telephone room, those be circulated as well. I don't know if it's related to this, Steve, but I would like you to comment about the if it's totally off topic, tell me. I can comment about the MIT open courseware idea. And does that also fit into this free concept of in the technology tools arrangement?
Well, I'm a very strong proponent of what MIT is doing with the open courseware, because of course what they're doing is making this content available for free to the world. Now, I don't know totally what their motives were. I believe part of it was a marketing motive. I believe part of it was to show that the content by itself does not equal an MIT education. But I think the impact is undeniable. I've talked to people from MIT, and they talk about people from around the world writing in and saying, you know, this material was a godsend. And there are other institutions looking at MIT, looking at model, and looking at contributing their own material, and some have started. I can't think of their names off the top of my head, unfortunately, but some have started contributing content. And this is the way it will work. And when we have not just MIT, but 100,000 educational institutions putting content out there, that's the model that will get us off the ground with as one of the commenters said, our global neural network. The thing MIT doesn't do with OpenCourseWare that I wish they would is list it with RSS, because I've set up a system very similar to EduRSS, which is called DLearn, which is specifically for the aggregation and redistribution of learning resources, learning objects. And if MIT were to index their materials with RSS, this is the sort of material that would come into DLearn and be mixed with other educational material from around the world and to produce very specific learning resources for people. So I think they're on the right path. I believe to a large degree their motives are good. Certainly the impact has been tremendous, but it's a first step in a much longer journey.
I think we have one time for one more question or two more questions at the most. Not only does he have to catch an airplane, there's a whole host of presenters that are knocking at the door, badgering, pouring him on, wanting to get in. So two more questions, and Stephen Downs will let him go, and he has a long airplane trip all the way across the great continent of North America on a cold and snowy night up there. So let me just say to Stephen now my thanks. You hold it from here, Stephen, and let when you're finished with those couple of questions, you're ready to go. Let Yvonne come on, man, and we'll go from there.
Sounds good. I see Robin.
I have a question for Stephen. Stephen, how could we enhance Global Learning Day? You've seen it from the beginning. What do you think we could do to expand our reach?
Well, I'd like to. One of the things with Global Learn Day that's always been difficult for me is that it's very specifically timed. As I'm in a hotel room in Vancouver, squeezing in some time to participate in this, and that's the way it works. So I guess part of what I would want to do is to see a less synchronous component to it, a Global Learn Day blog, a Global Learn Day discussion room, something that would lead up to the audio component of it. I'm not saying don't do the audio. Audio obviously works for very many people, but there are other people, such as myself, who find audio limiting because it means I need to be maybe not in a certain place, but at a certain time, and that can be difficult for me.
The problem of that situation there, though, Stephen, is that there's so many people that are blind that really can't keep up with your text chat. That's the difficulty of having just text chat only.
Well, I'm not saying have a text chat only. I mean, I have nothing against the audio. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that the audio should be supplemented with text, more static text leading up to the conference for people like me who are temporally challenged.
I said this would be the last comment. And I gave Stephen really a laundry list. He was being very kind to us. He's, there's many, many, many things. There would be a laundry list that Stephen could contribute. The blogs and the wikis is part of all of that. And we're going to have quite a bit of discussion on that in the portion that may allow me after he wants to talk about some of that. So with that, Stephen, I think that you have to go. And I want to thank you very much. Stephen, you didn't tout your newsletter, but you should. It is an extraordinary newsletter. It will keep everybody up with the midnight candle reading and reading. Horrible thing to get, Stephen. I don't know how many times I want to subscribe. So thanks very much. You're welcome to the speech and your remarks and act. Ladies and gentlemen, here, I see Stephen Downs saying goodbye to Stephen, Canada, and the local viewer partners of this event.